The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back. Thursday, April 4th, 2024. I am Seth Liebson. Mr. Bill is here. Miss Terry is here. And David Dahl, my producer. Young David is here. We'll get an update from him, a gustatory update on the steak sandwich at the Dirty Drummer in just a little bit. I will tell you about my new hero, Craig, who works with us, and what he did on the food front in a little bit. This first story I want to talk about with you, though, is something that will have particular interest for young David. No Labels has announced it is ending all efforts to get involved in the 2024.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. You've been on this for such a long time.
But I feel like, I don't want to interrupt the monologue, okay, but I feel like I called this like a week ago with the death of Lieberman.
Yeah, you did. But you were really thinking that they were a threat for like 2 years. Or if not a threat, you thought they were something we should pay attention to.
Interesting.
Yeah. And you were not wrong, because listen to this. They raised $70 million and achieved literally nothing. They raised $70 million and achieved literally nothing.
Sounds a lot like Arizona's current sitting senator.
Well, it's an interesting. You may not know this. I think, I'm willing to be wrong, but I think I'm the only failed congressional candidate for office who returned every dollar that was donated to his campaign to the donors. I think I may have that appellation. I think I may have that about me. I don't know of another case of that having been done. And that's what I did when I didn't make it. So the question is, will they return this $70 million, or are they just going to, you know, put it into some other pocket or venture? Listen to the NBC opening lines. No Labels, the bipartisan group that has been working toward putting a third-party presidential ticket on the ballot in all 50 states in 2024, announced Thursday that it was ending its efforts. Quote, No Labels has always said we would only offer our ballot line to a ticket if we could identify candidates with a credible path to winning the White House, CEO and founder Nancy Jacobson said in a statement. No such candidates emerged, so the responsible course of action is for us to stand down. Is that the responsible course of action, or is it to return the donors' money? I wrote about and spoke about No Labels last year when I noticed that the Bulwark read through their platform and called it pabulum. And I said, let's talk about that for a moment, shall we? Pabulum is not just a breakfast cereal. It's a word for the banality of everything No Labels pretended to be. On voting rights, if you went to their platform, here's what they said. Quote, every legal voter should have the right and the ability to vote. Every legal vote should be counted, and every counted vote should be verified. Close quote. Who could possibly disagree with that? How is that even necessary in a political platform? The devil is not in No Labels' details, but in its platform's total lack of detail when it comes, for example, to the words every legal vote. Here's what they wrote about national security. Quote, a world led by America is safer than a world led by Russia and China. Well, who can argue with that unless you're Russia or China? On civil rights, the document said, quote, every American deserves respect and freedom from discrimination. Now you on board, Bill? Yeah. You on board with them now because they said every American deserves respect and freedom from discrimination? As for transgendered individuals, No Labels refuses to take a stand, of course, simply offering the hope for leaders, quote, who consider this controversial issue from a position of dignity, respect, and common sense, close quote. You racing to sign up with that movement now, are you? This is one of the many times in the document that the noun common sense or adjective common sense are used to dodge specifics on difficult subjects. We've said before that John F. Kennedy famously attributed to Dante the quote that the hottest places in hell are reserved for those who in times of great moral crisis maintain their neutrality. It's not actually a quote or line from Dante, but that was his rendering of it, and it has its own certain resonance here, doesn't it? Because politics should be taken seriously. It is, after all, how we govern ourselves, and more importantly, how we build the community in which we engage in everything from our family lives to our business and recreational lives. In his first chapter on politics, in the book by that title, Aristotle wrote, quote, "It is a characteristic of man that he alone has any sense of good and evil, of just and unjust, and the association of living beings who have this sense make a family and a state. And the state is by nature clearly prior to the family and to the individual, since the whole is of necessity prior to the part." Now, we've spoken before about how it might be odd to think of the state as prior to the family. But it's not the liberal point that Aristotle is making there, that if we don't he's making the point that if we don't envision and create a just and good state, we cannot raise a just and good family. The environment for thriving must be envisioned and created if we want the success of any organ or organism within it. Andrew Yang was speaking for No Labels, came to Arizona about a year ago to help start the No Labels Party here. And the Arizona Republic reported this, quote, "At a crowded, buzzy lunch in downtown Phoenix, Yang called Arizona ground zero for democracy. He said, quote, this is a genuine swing state that's going to determine the future of America, close quote. Andrew Yang, he was the one doing the fundraising and bidding for No Labels. He was kind of a media phenom for a little while in 2020 during the Democratic primaries, but really not anywhere else. He came in eighth in New Hampshire and then dropped out of the race endorsing Joe Biden and then ran for mayor of New York 2 years later. He came in fourth. I don't know why an eighth place and a fourth place candidate is who you want to lead your new party based on pabulum. There was buzz around the No Labels group here in Arizona, some of it from young David. Not that he was attracted to it. He just thought it was an interesting phenomenon to give him his due. Correct me if I'm misstating your position on this. You just thought it was worthy of covering.
I concur.
Yeah, okay. If you looked up the Arizona's chair for No Labels, he's an attorney who specializes in marijuana legalization. Not exactly the burning or needed issue, is it? Not that I would think. If you go to the No Labels national website, a lot of it, most of it, is about campaign finance and government reform. Now, if you're like me, you think you're in the midst of what Shakespeare once called airy abstraction. And isn't the point of political parties and ideologies undergirding them to remove abstraction? As Theseus put it in A Midsummer Night's Dream, to give airy nothing a local habitation in a name. Isn't that the point of an ideology in a party? Something to actually believe in and argue and vote for that, yes, does invite argument and disagreement. I mean, who supports hate? Who opposes each of us meeting our full potentials? I worry about a movement dressed up as a political party and platform that sounds like a Michelle Obama self-help book. But that's what their party sounds like. How do we excerpt her book? What was her book? The Light We Carry. To mix our differentness with togetherness, Mr. Bill. That's in her book. The Light We Carry. The job is to mix our differentness with our togetherness. In knitting, when you create the first stitch of a new project, you cast on. When an item is finished, you bind it off. Both of these actions, I found, are incredibly satisfying, she writes. The bookends of something manageable and finite. They give me a sense of completion in a world that will always and forever feel chaotic and incomplete. Any time your circumstances start to feel all-consuming, I suggest you try going in the other direction, towards the small, she writes. Go towards the small. This is the essence of no labels. And people think she should run for president? It's frontier gibberish is what it is. It's area abstraction. It's personality over principle. And that is a very dangerous thing indeed. I'm Seth Leibson, if I can get my name out, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Listen to that bass projection on that bass. Oh, my God, it's so good. Progression, not projection. That bass progression on that song, Thunder Island by Jay Ferguson. 602-508-0960, 602-5080-960. Young David, you want to give us a review of the steak sandwich at the Dirty Drummer?
I did go to the Dirty Drummer last night, yep. And so did about 50 dozen other people.
50 dozen?
Show okay. Last night, and I didn't know that.
Uh-huh.
So I walked in, and they're like, are you here for the show? And I'm like, well, I'm just here because it's a Wednesday, and I want to hang out. And they're like, okay, come on in.
Yeah.
They were going to charge me a ticket price at the door.
Yeah, you just wanted a Bloody Mary and a steak sandwich and another steak sandwich. Sandwich and build it to the Underhills.
What?
From Fletch.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Good steak. You could tell it was real steak.
Yeah.
It was like fajita style where you could really tell that they had sliced it. However, there was nothing on it.
Good.
It was just seasoned steak on a toasted hoagie roll.
Good.
Now, when you have a steak sandwich, usually I'm expecting some peppers, maybe some cheese, you know, a little, what do they call that? Philly cheesesteak style, or maybe a condiment of some kind. Usually cheese.
I don't think a Philly cheesesteak is what I have in mind when I think of a steak sandwich.
Okay, well then just a steak sandwich with some lettuce. But there was absolutely nothing.
But you could have ordered it. They
mm-hmm.
have all that. You, yes, you can.
All right, well, next time you order
I'm telling
it
for
me.
You can. Go
right,
with the big
next
guy.
Next Wednesday.
Go with the big guy, and you'll get what you need.
Next Wednesday, we're going to go.
I told you Craig is my new hero, gustatory hero.
Craig?
Yeah. I asked him what he had for lunch today. He went to Windy City Sliders, which is an old establishment on Indian School, which is a trip if you haven't been there.
I have not.
I once went in there. You go there if you don't want your arteries to get too soft. I went one time, I remember a woman in front of me, she ordered her fries double dipped. I didn't know what that meant. It means deep fried twice, because the once is, yeah, I know.
I know,
and they happily do that. So Craig went to, in and of itself, going to a hamburger joint like that is not heroic. What was heroic was, before he left, I saw him eat a slice of cake.
Yes.
He ate a slice of cake, and then he went to Windy City Sliders.
There are still slices of pie cake and floating around this office.
He is my hero. He is my hero. By the way, speaking of all this fried, why couldn't we have a fried cheeseburger? Wouldn't that be good? A deep fried cheeseburger. Fried bacon and the soda. Have you watched the Sodalax video?
I have not.
You need to watch the Sodalax video in Texas. Have you seen it, the chicken fried bacon?
See, I feel like, chicken fried steak is beef. It's not chicken, right? So I feel like you could just do like a chicken fried burger.
I would think
beef,
so.
You know, because burgers are beef.
Yeah, it would.
Chicken fried burger.
I know. It sounds good. Why can't we get one?
Put some gravy on it.
Yes, or mashed potatoes or something.
Yeah,
why wouldn't you want that?
Why don't we suggest it to some of our friends.
Yeah, we know people.
At the Drummer.
We know. Yeah,
and we'll
we
make
know,
it happen.
We know people.
It'll be the Seth special.
Yeah.
We'll give you a special number on the menu.
A deep fried burger.
You know.
Why not?
And for every burger sold, you make half a cent.
Yeah. Mr. Bill, look up Sodalax chicken fried bacon on YouTube and give us a report on it when we come back from a break. I think you'll find it the most health instructive video you'll ever watch, and you're a man of health. Okay, I want to talk about, obviously, the big international news today, which is the White House and Joe Biden's call with Prime Minister Netanyahu, which was inspired or at least activated by the deaths, the sad, tragic deaths of the volunteers. I think they were volunteers for the World Central Kitchen workers who were killed in an airstrike, in an Israeli airstrike. It does look like the Biden administration's policy towards Israel is changing, and it more than looks like it. That's what they are saying. They are saying it is changing. I've been having these conversations. We did this a little bit yesterday. I sometimes wonder whether we have the weird Seinfeldian expectation that once we put a man on the moon, we were never going to be satisfied again. We have this notion that these things are uncommon in war, that 7 aid workers would be killed. And there's this added notion, you heard it from the founder of the World Central Kitchen, that it was deliberate. He has no proof of this, by the way, and Israel has denied and apologized. There is absolutely no proof. In fact, John Kirby has said it was not a deliberate strike against them. Why would Israel deliberately strike? Why would they do that? There is no evidence of that. But does anyone remember that when Joe Biden was vice president and we were bombing in Afghanistan, that we killed 42 civilians in an attack on Doctors Without Borders? Does anyone remember that at all? 42. The history of the world, the history of war, is that these damn sad things happen. Biden killed an aid worker and his family, 10 innocent civilians, in a drone strike in Afghanistan when he was president. 10. 10. In Yemen, in 2015, a Saudi-led coalition airstrike hit a wedding party in the village of Wajia in Amran, killing at least 131 civilians and injuring scores more. The strike was condemned by international human rights organizations, but I don't remember it being news for more than 2 days. 30 civilians in a U.S. airstrike targeting the Taliban in 2016, again, under Barack Obama. A different airstrike, killing 30 civilians in Kunduz. Of course, there was the Ghaziabad airstrike, a U.S.-led coalition airstrike targeting a suspected Taliban compound in the village of Azizabad. 90 civilians killed by the U.S. At this point, we are now into the hundreds of civilians the U.S. has killed in airstrikes in the Biden Barack Obama and Joe Biden administrations. So yes, it doesn't excuse and it doesn't sanitize and it doesn't help in any way reverse the tragedy of what happened here. But the idea that A, this was deliberate, or B, unheard of, is fallacious. And people making an extraordinary effort to say so need to check themselves and their history and ask themselves if the condemnations and the allegations of guilt and mens rea, a guilty mind on this, are stronger than the hundreds that Joe Biden and Barack Obama were responsible for as commanders-in-chief of the air raids and the drone strikes, then they really need to check themselves. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. Sandra's in Peoria. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, Seth. Thank you so much for taking my phone call, sir. I appreciate that.
You bet.
I wanted to make a comment about what you were saying about Israel and the airstrikes. My mother's from the Middle East, and I'm not Jewish, but I will tell you that I'm also non-Arab. So I'll stay as a mediator, but being someone who is a mediator and has basically known about the Middle East all my life, I know that Israel would never intentionally, if anything, Israel is the most compassionate country in the Middle East now, okay, in my opinion. And from what I know is that if they unleashed the full force, the Biden administration forgets Israel wiped the floor with the Middle East in 7 days, okay? If they wanted to, you think today with all the technology and the intelligence that the Middle East, the Jewish Israeli Israelis have, you think that they wouldn't be able to, in 1 day, eradicate Hamas I'm pretty sure they would. And the problem is the Biden administration is the one that is in the way. And unfortunately, and I'm so sorry for the loss, these are casualties of war.
Yeah.
These people entered a war zone. I am so sorry for their families. I really am from the bottom of my heart.
Yep.
But I know Israel would never intentionally, deliberately hurt anyone. If they, anyone, if anything, they have been trying so hard not to hurt any of the Palestinian Arabs who are in Gaza and all of that. I know that for a fact.
Well, so, yeah, I think we lose a little perspective here. Thank you for your comments. You're welcome to stay on the line a moment while I tease a little bit more of what you're saying out.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
The comments you're getting from leaders around the world and in the United States now is Israel needs to wrap this up. This has been going on too long. Do they know why it's been going on too long? It could have been done in 6 days. You're absolutely right. I think a lot of people expected that it would have been done in 6 days because the normal reaction to what happened on October 7th, most countries would have turned that place into a parking lot and they would not have cared and put their own soldiers in harm's way. But we are now dealing with tunnel warfare. And that is ahistorical. We have I don't know if any country has ever fought tunnel warfare before. And it's delicate and it's surgical if you don't want to engage in carpet bombing. Carpet bombing would have stopped this. In 6 days, it would have, and then no one would be saying Israel needs to wrap it up precisely because of the care and concern for being as surgical as they possibly can be is the reason you have a 1 to 1.5 civilian, excuse me, with 1 to 1.5 terrorist to civilian combatant to civilian death ratio. The world average for warfare is about 1 to 8. Israel's got 1 to 1.5. Precisely because of what you said, Sandra, there would be no reason in the world giving the opinion against Israel that they would deliberately do this. There would be no reason in the world for them to do it. And I think what people are unfortunately doing is confusing an atrocity, which was October 7th, with a tragedy, with it, which is what happened in this war, in this case.
You're right, sir. You're absolutely right.
A little perspective would do well, but thank you for providing it. Where in the Middle East is your family from? I'm curious if you're willing to say.
Iraq.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
No,
Dad.
Thank you. I appreciate your comments, Sandra, very much. Thank you. Anyway, I just, you know, it's this sense of history. This is one of the reasons that I have been, outside of other youth issues, been obsessed with the problem of not learning history, sometimes American history, sometimes world history, sometimes merely the history of the Barack Obama administration, where, as I was pointing out, hundreds of civilians were killed in airstrikes, including Doctors Without Borders, patients, not just food workers, patients, doctors, not just food workers, doctors. Now, the head of this organization, Restaurateur in D.C., World Central Kitchen, who is saying Israel did this deliberately, is, you know, saying this with no evidence whatsoever, and it's reverberating, and it's unfortunate. But, you know, there needs to be, too, some investigation as to how the World Central Kitchen went from natural disasters to war zones, because they started with natural disaster zones and now went to have now moved to war zones. And I don't believe that they have done the necessary work one needs to do to coordinate. What you do in a natural disaster is much different than what you have to do in a war zone to protect your people and serve your interests. Enough said. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 605-080-9960. Speaking of history, it was on this day in 1968, right?
That 56 years ago.
Yeah, that Martin Luther King Jr. was felled by an assassin. And really one of the great moments in rhetoric. That's probably a too close of the use of the word great after that first sentence. The rhetoric that came out of Robert Kennedy's mouth extemporaneously to the speech he gave to supporters of his in Indianapolis, Indiana that night. It's one of the great speeches of the 20th century, obviously based on awfulness, awful, awful atrocity of the assassination of Martin Luther King. Mostly black audience. And he gets up on the podium to give a planned political rally speech to them and extemporaneously delivers the news to them, for they had not heard that their civil rights hero and leader, Martin Luther King, was shot. Play a little of it, young David, would you?
Please. I have some very sad news for all of you, and that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings. He died in the cause of that effort. In this difficult day, in this difficult time for the United States, it's perhaps well to ask what kind of a nation we are and what direction we want to move in. For those of you who are black, considering the evidence evidently is that there were white people who were responsible, you can be filled with bitterness and with hatred and a desire for revenge. We can move in that direction as a country, in greater polarization, black people amongst blacks and white amongst whites, filled with hatred toward one another. Or we can make an effort, as Martin Luther King did, to understand and to comprehend and replace that violence, that stain of bloodshed that is spread across our land, with an effort to understand, compassion, and love. For those of you who are black and are tempted to be filled with hatred and mistrust of the injustice of such an act against all white people, I would only say that I can also feel in my own heart the same kind of feeling. I had a member of my family killed, but he was killed by a white man. But we have to make an effort in the United States. We have to make an effort to understand, to get beyond or go beyond these rather difficult times.
That's good, David.
My favorite poem.
That's fine.
My favorite poem.
You can end it there. Boy, talk about rhetoric when you think of the emotion of that moment, telling a black audience that Martin Luther King was killed. It was supposed to be a cheerful rally. He does this extemporaneously, Robert Kennedy does. People say that they make comparisons to great rhetoricians. I remember when Bill Clinton was president, people said, well, we haven't had a president this articulate since John Kennedy. You go to the John Kennedy Library and Museum in Dorchester Bay and you look at his press conferences or whatever. Clinton didn't have anything close to what John Kennedy had. They were just better. They were just much better. Now, is this the best we can do? Well, you think about where we've gone from. that kind of rhetoric to the rhetoric in our politics today. But the message that he delivered was, I think, the durable here, not the ability to do it, but what he said is the durable. Think about the power of those words. That those of you who are black, considering that Martin Luther King was evidently killed by a white man, that you can be filled with hatred and desire for revenge. We can move in that direction as a country, black amongst black, white amongst white, filled with hate toward one another. And he says, and I am not unfeeling towards what you're feeling, because his brother was killed by a white man as well. Oswald, obviously, I think we can say, for whatever theory you buy into over the assassination of JFK, didn't do it for racial purposes. But the notion that Robert Kennedy tried to identify himself was a tremendous rhetorical gift right there, a tremendous rhetorical gift, that how we wish would have obtained. You think about where we are now with what we were talking about a lot yesterday, DEI and the divisiveness in this country, how we went from a notion of integration to resegregation, whether it be by, you know, graduation ceremonies or dorm rooms. It's weird what we integrate and what we segregate, isn't it? You think about that? Does anyone ever step back and think about what we segregate and what we integrate now? We segregate among things that should be basically meaningless, like the color of one's skin you were born into, the color of the skin you were born with. We self-segregate along those lines. But when you take the most fundamental distinction in all of creation and nature, like the male and female distinction, that we want to integrate in our bathrooms and in our athletics. And even amongst our children, be able to switch. It's a perverse integration and a perverse segregation we are engaging in here. It should be precisely the opposite. The male-female distinction is what moves the world. The racial distinction isn't, but we segregate and make distinctions based on race while we increasingly refuse to make distinctions based on the most fundamental difference in all, not just humanity, but life, all life forms. It's an interesting perversion we've entered here because we left the King Kennedy notion, because we've lost the notion that our Constitution was designed to be colorblind, as was our nation, as was our human species. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, portions of which are brought to you by our dear friends at YRefi. Check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com. Or give them a call at 888-YREFI-24. That's 888-YREFI-24. YRefi has a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio, and it actually helps people. But what it can do for you is get you a 10.25% fixed rate of return, and it's not correlated to the stock market or the Federal Reserve. Additionally, with YRefi, you really get a lot of flexibility and control. You can turn your income on or off, compound it, whatever you like. With YRefi, there are absolutely no fees, and there's no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. Of course, you get a monthly statement with no surprises, but the best of all, you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return. Check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com, or call them at 888-YREFI-24. Peggy Noonan's column in the Wall Street Journal, that'll be probably tomorrow's print edition, it's online now, gets at something that I've been thinking a lot about lately. She writes, there's a funny thing that happens in a nation's thought. At some point, everyone knows something is true and talks about it with each other. The truth becomes a cliche before it becomes actionable. I think we're there almost with Joe Biden's inability to perform the duties of his job. I think everyone knows this to be true. I think everyone even will talk about it and snicker about it with each other. It's not a laughing matter. And I think, unfortunately, for too many, it has become cliche when it's deadly serious. Deadly serious. Sage Steele, the former ESPN reporter, is going on a tour now and talking about an interview she did with Joe Biden in 2 years ago, 2021, 3 years ago, and how as a journalist, she was so deeply offended because her bosses told her that she could not deviate from the prepared script. Well, she wasn't so offended that she didn't do it, but she did it. And interestingly enough, she's now getting credit for talking about it. I'm willing to give her credit and for striking out and being independent. Kind of maybe at the time it would have mattered a little bit more if she refused to do it and engaged in. It's not civil disobedience now that you've been let go of ESPN to talk about it. Now when you're no longer, that's not real civil disobedience. Civil disobedience and heroism comes when you take the hit for doing the right thing. Anyway, I want to say more about that and about what Peggy Noonan is actually talking about, because it wasn't that. We'll be right back.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.